Hello. This is the listening part of your Year 12 exam in English of 2011. It will consist of three tasks. You will hear the texts twice. Task 1. A guided tour. Listen to a guide talking about a whiskey company and complete the notes about it with the missing information. Use no more than two words or a number per gap. Look at the example. You have a minute to read the task.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tullamore Irish Heritage Centre. My name's Frank Mulligan, and I'm your guide for this morning. OK, can everyone hear me?
Yes?
Good. OK, so let's start. Now, just before we start the tour itself, I'd like to give you some information about the company. First of all, how it started. The Tullamore Whiskey Company began in 1829, which means that the company has been making whiskey for just under 200 years. The man who started it all was Michael Molloy, and when he started the business, it was quite small. Only 12 men worked in the distillery, and they only made around 100 bottles of whiskey a week. Now, the man who really made the company grow was Daniel E. Williams. He took over in 1887, and he ran the company for many years. The Tullamore Whiskey Distillery was here in Tullamore from 1829 until the mid-1950s, when it moved to Middleton. The distillery has been there since then. Of course, the buildings here have changed a lot since then. But Tullamore Dew has existed for about 180 years. But I've only been working here for 150 years. No, but seriously, since the days of Daniel Williams, the company has been growing all the time. It's still not a very big company, though. These days, about 250 people work there. The company produces around 2,500,000 bottles of whiskey a year. A lot of whiskey, eh? And the number of countries that they export to, that number has increased to around 80. So, you can find Tullamore whiskey almost anywhere in the world. Right, I'll tell you more as we go around. And at the end, we can all taste a glass of the whiskey that's made the name of Tullamore famous worldwide. But now, let's go and see how we make the whiskey. So, if you'll all just follow me, please, then we can...
You will have half a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tullamore Irish Heritage Centre. My name's Frank Mulligan, and I'm your guide for this morning. Okay, can everyone hear me?
Yes?
Good. Okay, so let's start. Now, just before we start the tour itself, I'd like to give you some information about the company. First of all, how it started. The Tullamore Whiskey Company began in 1829, which means that the company has been making whiskey for just under 200 years. The man who started it all was Michael Molloy, and when he started the business, it was quite small. Only 12 men worked in the distillery, and they only made around 100 bottles of whiskey a week. Now, the man who really made the company grow was Daniel E. Williams. He took over in 1887, and he ran the company for many years. The Tullamore Whiskey Distillery was here in Tullamore from 1829 until the mid-1950s, when it moved to Middleton. The distillery has been there since then. Of course, the buildings here have changed a lot since then, but Tullamore Dew has existed for about 180 years. But I've only been working here for 150 years. No, but seriously, since the days of Daniel Williams, the company has been growing all the time. It's still not a very big company, though. These days, about 250 people work there. The company produces around 2,500,000 bottles of whiskey a year. A lot of whiskey, eh? And the number of countries that they export to, that number has increased to around 80. So, you can find Tullamore whiskey almost anywhere in the world. Right, I'll tell you more as we go around. And at the end, we can all taste a glass of the whiskey that's made the name of Tullamore famous worldwide. But now, let's go and see how we make the whiskey. So, if you'll all just follow me, please, then we can...
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task one. Go on to task two. Task two, hurricane. You will hear a report about a hurricane. Listen to the text and circle the correct option. Look at the example. You have 2 minutes now to read the task.
This is Allison Sasso reporting for station KTFH in Florida. The sky is clear blue, and the ocean is deceptively calm here in southern Florida. It's the kind of day when you would expect the beaches to be packed with tourists enjoying the surf and sun. But the beaches are eerily silent, except for a few seagulls circling the waves. Traveling inland, though, you'll find a totally different mood. Parking spaces are hard to find, and there are long lines at every checkout counter as people stock up on batteries, water bottles, and flashlights. You see, despite the calm weather now, people here are getting ready for a hurricane, the first of this hurricane season. Meteorologist Kyle Zaxter works for the Weather Service. Kyle, what can we expect in Homestead?
Well, Allison, Hurricane Haley is about 70 miles off the coast, with winds reported to be up to 100 miles per hour. It has already damaged islands in the Caribbean.
Local residents at this shopping center are busy. Adam Rashap, what are your plans? Are you going to leave?
Huh? No, I'm staying here to protect my house. We'll be all right. Hurricanes are not usually as bad as they predict. Everyone panics and gets ready, but it's never really a big deal.
But authorities say people should stay informed and not second-guess the authorities. Despite reconnaissance aircraft, a sophisticated satellite, and radar used by the National Weather Service, forecasting the path of a hurricane is not an easy task. Kyle?
We input a lot of data into the computer to get a forecast, but there's still an element of interpretation. Often the storm will change route or intensity unexpectedly. Folks have to realize that they can be very, very vulnerable. The worst thing is to be caught off guard.
What can people do to prepare?
Well, Allison, they can stock up on supplies. People should have plenty of water on hand, at least a couple of gallons per person, and more if possible. Sewers can back up, and water gets contaminated. You need food for at least 3 days, more if possible. For your canned goods, make sure there's a can opener, manual, not electric. You'll need a flashlight and a battery-powered radio.
Kyle, you also said people need a sturdy pair of work boots. Why?
Yes, if your place has been damaged, you don't want to be walking into anything dangerous when you come back. Snakes, for instance, get dislocated by the hurricane, just like people, and end up in unexpected places.
Ooh, a nasty surprise. Let's find out what someone else is going to do. Dale Henley, what are your plans?
Well, we don't live here. We're down for a vacation with the kids from Minnesota. No hurricanes there. Oh, my husband and the kids are pretty excited, but honestly, I'm scared stiff. Oh, if we have to evacuate, I'll be relieved.
Most tourists aren't prepared to face a hurricane, but if you plan to visit a coastal spot in the late summer, then you could hit some very foul weather.
That's right. The main thing for tourists is to know what plans or provisions the hotel has and what they can do if there's a power outage or if the water's bad. You need to know where you're going if you have to leave, because roads get flooded and highways get backed up.
What about money?
Sure, you might need additional cash. People forget that ATMs won't work without power.
Here is a woman who has lived here for more than 50 years, Barbara Swanson. Mrs. Swanson, are you going to stay or leave?
Well, we're not sure yet. I've been glued to the news all day. I always get a little jittery when I hear talk of hurricanes. We lost our house to a hurricane back when I was first married.
So you might tough it out this time. I see your son is loading wood on top of the car. Is that to protect the windows?
Yes, just in case. Seems he got the last 6 pieces in the store. Everybody's doing the same thing, I guess.
In Homestead, all residents can do is watch, wait, and try not to panic. This is Allison Sasso reporting.
You have a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
This is Allison Sasso reporting for station KTFH in Florida. The sky is clear blue and the ocean is deceptively calm here in southern Florida. It's the kind of day when you would expect the beaches to be packed with tourists enjoying the surf and sun. But the beaches are eerily silent, except for a few seagulls circling the waves. Traveling inland, though, you'll find a totally different mood. Parking spaces are hard to find, and there are long lines at every checkout counter as people stock up on batteries, water bottles, and flashlights. You see, despite the calm weather now, people here are getting ready for a hurricane, the first of this hurricane season. Meteorologist Kyle Zaxter works for the Weather Service. Kyle, what can we expect in Homestead?
Well, Allison, Hurricane Haley is about 70 miles off the coast, with winds reported to be up to 100 miles per hour. It has already damaged islands in the Caribbean.
Local residents at this shopping center are busy. Adam Rashap, what are your plans? Are you going to leave?
Huh? No, I'm staying here to protect my house. We'll be all right. Hurricanes are not usually as bad as they predict. Everyone panics and gets ready, but it's never really a big deal.
But authorities say people should stay informed and not second-guess the authorities. Despite reconnaissance aircraft, a sophisticated satellite, and radar used by the National Weather Service, forecasting the path of a hurricane is not an easy task. Kyle?
We input a lot of data into the computer to get a forecast, but there's still an element of interpretation. Often the storm will change route or intensity unexpectedly. Folks have to realize that they can be very, very vulnerable. The worst thing is to be caught off guard.
What can people do to prepare?
Well, Allison, they can stock up on supplies. People should have plenty of water on hand, at least a couple of gallons per person, and more if possible. Sewers can back up, and water gets contaminated. You need food for at least 3 days, more if possible. For your canned goods, make sure there's a can opener, manual, not electric. You'll need a flashlight and a battery-powered radio.
Kyle, you also said people need a sturdy pair of work boots. Why?
Yes, if your place has been damaged, you don't want to be walking into anything dangerous when you come back. Snakes, for instance, get dislocated by the hurricane, just like people, and end up in unexpected places.
Ooh, a nasty surprise. Let's find out what someone else is going to do. Dale Henley, what are your plans?
Well, we don't live here. We're down for a vacation with the kids from Minnesota. No hurricanes there. Oh, my husband and the kids are pretty excited, but honestly, I'm scared stiff. Oh, if we have to evacuate, I'll be relieved.
Most tourists aren't prepared to face a hurricane, but if you plan to visit a coastal spot in the late summer, then you could hit some very foul weather.
That's right. The main thing for tourists is to know what plans or provisions the hotel has and what they can do if there's a power outage or if the water's bad. You need to know where you're going if you have to leave, because roads get flooded and highways get backed up.
What about money?
Sure. You might need additional cash. People forget that ATMs won't work without power.
Here is a woman who has lived here for more than 50 years, Barbara Swanson. Mrs. Swanson, are you going to stay or leave?
Well, we're not sure yet. I've been glued to the news all day. I always get a little jittery when I hear talk of hurricanes. We lost our house to a hurricane back when I was first married.
So you might tough it out this time. I see your son is loading wood on top of the car. Is that to protect the windows?
Yes, just in case. Seems he got the last 6 pieces in the store. Everybody's doing the same thing, I guess.
In Homestead, all residents can do is watch, wait, and try not to panic. This is Allison Sasso reporting.
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task two. Go on to task three. Task three. No time to think. You will hear an interview about the influence modern technologies have on people's way of thinking and lifestyle. Listen to David Brooks in the following interview and complete the notes. Look at the example. You have a minute to read the task.
It's Newsweek on Air. I'm Warren Levinson of the Associated Press.
I'm David Alpern of Newsweek.
David Brooks, you argue that we already live in an over-communicated world that will only become more so in the next tech era. What exactly do you mean by that?
The problem is that we've developed technology that gets us so much information, that we've got cell phones ringing every second, we've got computers and laptops, we've got personal organizers, and it's just we're just being bombarded with communications, and every advance in technology seems to create more and more communications at us. And I do believe at the end of the day, it shapes our personality because we are sort of overwhelmed by the information flow.
Seriously, though, just last week we reported on research suggesting that all the multitasking may actually make our brains work better and faster, producing, as it's been reported, a worldwide increase in IQ up to 20 points and more in recent decades. Can you see any benefit in all these mental gymnastics we now have to go through?
Yeah, I don't think we're becoming a race of global idiots, but I think certain skills are enhanced and certain are not. You know, the ability to make fast decisions, to answer a dozen emails in 5 minutes, to fill out maybe big SAT type tests, that's enhanced. But creativity is something that happens slowly. It happens when your brain is just noodling around, just playing, when it puts together ideas which you hadn't thought of. Or maybe you have time, say, to read a book. You're a business person, but you have time to read a book about history or time to read a book about a philosopher and something that happened long ago or something, some idea somebody thought of long ago. Actually, you know, it occurs to you that you can think of your own business in that way. And so it's this mixture of unrelated ideas that feeds your productivity, feeds your creativity. And if your mind is disciplined to answer every email, then you don't have time for that playful noodling. You don't have time for those unexpected conjunctions. So I think maybe we're getting smarter in some senses, but I think it is a threat to our creativity and to our reflection.
So how wired or wirelessly are you tied into the new technology?
A total addict. When I'm out there with my kids playing in our little league or something like that, I've got my cell phone in my pocket. I'm always wondering, gee, did I get a voicemail? And that's why I think I'm sort of driven to write about this, because I do see the negative effects it's having on my own brain patterns.
Could be Newsweek on Air calling. David Brooks, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You have half a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
It's Newsweek on Air. I'm Warren Levinson of the Associated Press.
I'm David Alpern of Newsweek.
David Brooks, you argue that we already live in an over-communicated world that will only become more so in the next tech era. What exactly do you mean by that?
The problem is that we've developed technology that gets us so much information, that we've got cell phones ringing every second, we've got computers and laptops, we've got personal organizers, and it's just we're just being bombarded with communications, and every advance in technology seems to create more and more communications at us. And I do believe at the end of the day, it shapes our personality because we are sort of overwhelmed by the information flow.
Seriously, though, just last week we reported on research suggesting that all the multitasking may actually make our brains work better and faster, producing, as it's been reported, a worldwide increase in IQ up to 20 points and more in recent decades. Can you see any benefit in all these mental gymnastics we now have to go through?
Yeah, I don't think we're becoming a race of global idiots, but I think certain skills are enhanced and certain are not. You know, the ability to make fast decisions, to answer a dozen emails in 5 minutes, to fill out maybe big SAT type tests, that's enhanced. But creativity is something that happens slowly. It happens when your brain is just noodling around, just playing, when it puts together ideas which you hadn't thought of. Or maybe you have time, say, to read a book. You're a business person, but you have time to read a book about history or time to read a book about a philosopher, and something that happened long ago or something, some idea somebody thought of long ago, actually, you know, it occurs to you that you can think of your own business in that way. And so it's this mixture of unrelated ideas that feeds your productivity, feeds your creativity. And if your mind is disciplined to answer every email, then you don't have time for that playful noodling. You don't have time for those unexpected conjunctions. So I think maybe we're getting smarter in some senses, but I think it is a threat to our creativity and to our reflection.
So how wired or wirelessly are you tied into the new technology?
A total addict. When I'm out there with my kids playing in our little league or something like that, I've got my cell phone in my pocket. I'm always wondering, gee, did I get a voicemail? And that's why I think I'm sort of driven to write about this, because I do see the negative effects it's having on my own brain patterns.
Could be Newsweek on Air calling. David Brooks, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task 3 and the whole listening test.